All right, it's a good afternoon and welcome to, of course, the last edition of this week that is on the radar. And of course, we are continuing and with this week has been one of the busiest week I can see. But we managed to pull it off with a lot of conversations, starting on Monday up to now. Having different officials coming through to just help us understand certain dynamics of development. And today is no exceptional, and we will be, there is a visitation from the Prime Minister is visiting the Kavango area, and I'm looking for my colleague, Anakleta, who is able to fill us in on what is currently on the ground. And then from there, we will have Jesa Shipingana, who is a horticulturist, who is also coming to tell us, and we just want to know the participation. All right, sorry for that silence. I thought my mic was off. was on. I've been just talking to myself. But I'm joined with my colleague, by my colleague, of course, Anakleta, to just give us an overview of what is going on in the Kavango area right now with the visitation of the Prime Minister. Anakleta, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to all the Eagle FM listeners.
Yes. Just fill us in. What is taking place? What is going on in Rundu right now? Where are you and what is happening?
All right, we are now at Tandama East Coast, where the Prime Minister is going, is here with the Minister of Education, just to familiarize yourself with the Tandama East issue, where the school was allegedly said to be illegal by the Minister of Education. But this is her first time to be here, and also the Prime Minister just decided that they need to come and speak a little bit to the community members, residents, and also parents of the kids that are having their learners at this school. Remember, this school have 558 learners that are taught under trees, and they've been here at the school for more than 3 years. And just this year, when AR movement leader Joba Mpanda came to visit the school, and he took a video which circulated on social media. It brought up a lot of discussion among politicians and also people in Namibia, where they decided that at least the school should just be built where the place is, because there is nowhere a school will be seen as being illegal since the school has been operating for more than 3 years, and a lot of learners are at the school. So this is currently the situation here in Rundu, and we are just going to wait for what is going to be decided by the Prime Minister and also the Minister of Education.
All right, so the school, we need to understand here, because is a school private or government school?
The school is actually a government school. They have allegedly also indicated and also written letters to different ministries and institutes to allow them to recognize this school and make it a government school. But then so far, there have been a lot of debates going on at the school itself, and so far, nothing has been allegedly that have happened to the people that have now seen them to be either a government or a private school. But for now, the residents themselves want the school to be government, because now the teachers that are teaching at this school are actually 14 qualified teachers, and they are not being paid by any institute. So they are just volunteering, doing their work, but then they are getting their schedules from the Minister of Education. So basically what I can say right now is everybody knows about the school within the region, but it's just for the school now to be illegal. But the school is still being told it's illegal because it's not operating with the mandate of education itself.
Okay, because I was at Ndama area in 2011. I'm not sure whether that is the same school you are talking about, because I think there was some sort of a school there. I don't know whether that's the same school you're talking about or maybe it's a different area.
No, this one is a different one.
Okay.
Yeah. Vendama school itself is now legal and it's built. There are more than 3,000 learners. But this one is like, if I'm not mistaken, it's 8 kilometers from Ndama school itself. Now, that's why it's called Ndama East.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Because that one is Ndama. By the time I was there, it was Ndama Primary School, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. That is Ndama Primary School. It's still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, apart from that Ndama East crisis, what mm-hmm. else did the Prime Minister, where else did the Prime Minister go mm-hmm. from that, or where does he intend to go after this? Because we understand that he's busy assessing the key development, areas in the region.
Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister also indicated that he will be visiting informal settlements, for instance, the Tuhingireni, Kehemu and Dama, and also access the roads in Rundu. And also he will be meeting up with some of the SWAPO members and also the governor just to familiarize himself in what is going on in the region. And he indicated that from 2 o'clock he will be driving around Rundu, because many people have been complaining though about the Rundu roads that are so bad. So he also wants to drive around just to see what is the situation here in Rundu.
Right, and Nkrita, before I let you go, just bring us to speed. I mean, you are on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Just the overall development of the region itself in the Kavango, whether it is Kavango East or West, I mean, I think you are familiar with the area very well. Mm-hmm. Just give us an overview of mm-hmm. the anything development that you see on the ground, practically, whether are we going backward or is there some improvement in some areas, mm-hmm. and what are the setbacks?
One of the things I can tell you right now, improvement, yes, there is steady improvement, especially in the education sector in the Kavango East and West region, mainly when it comes to education, because previously most of learners did not have access to schools, but now there have been schools that have been built. And also if you look at Rundu itself, we have like 118 schools, so which means the town is really growing, and education-wise, it is doing well. And also, to come to development, like in towns, there wasn't really a lot of shops to say in Rundu, but now there are more businesses. If we talk about 4,700 businesses, that is quite something that we are looking at. That at least some of the schools are improving. And also when looking into infrastructures, we didn't have a bigger hospital, but now we are turning a Rundu District Hospital to an intermediate hospital, where we have a whole maternity hospital on its own, and a hospital where surgery is being done, and also a hospital which caters for people from Nyangana, also some people from Katima as well. So there is still improvement and development happening, but more still needs to be done. And coming to the roads, yeah, last year there were roads that were constructed. For instance, the Maria Mwengere Road, which is now coming from the campus to Hingireni. And it's doing quite well because people have now stopped complaining about their cars, and the road is still doing so well. So those are some of the development I can tell you right now, Juan.
All right, Anacleta, excuse me for that. Let's hear what the decision will be as far as Ndama East School is concerned. Okay. And, of course, let me allow you to go inside and just get more information.
All right, thank you very much.
Right. All right, that was Anacleta. And in 15 minutes time, we will have our guest, and who is going to be with us. But before we get to our guest, I just want to, today we'll just do an overview, like a summary of everything, you know, that we have been doing the whole week. As far as, you know, analyzing the NDP 6 and just trying to make sense of it, and bringing in different voices with expertise to just, you know, break it down. You might say NDP 6 is something that is very exhausted now, which could be the case, but I don't think it is the case yet, because that booklet, especially the NDP 6 booklet, has a lot. You know, there is a lot in that booklet. And under pillar number 2, when it comes to human development and community resilience, you know, that one on its own is vast. It really has big things. The government is dreaming big. The government is really dreaming big, wanting to revive indigenous knowledge and to make sure that there is arts and heritage, I mean, cultural heritage, entertainment, you know, boosting entertainment and making it an industry of its own, where it can generate, you know, it can generate jobs. And, you know, where we talk about cultural heritage, creating some sort of tourism, you know, and, you know, creating jobs and employment opportunities from 0% to 3% or from 2%, from 0.0% to 0.8%. Those are big dreams. And fortunately or unfortunately, the NDP 6 has landed in the hands of the few. NDP 6 has landed in the hands of the few, not because it is that's not really intentional, but at the same time, I think it's intentional, because most of us don't read. You know, most of us don't read. We would rather want to hear somebody talking against something, and then we join them without understanding what the people are talking about, because we don't read on our own and ask questions, you know, based on what we have read. In most cases, we don't even ask questions. You know, we don't even ask questions. In most cases, we don't even ask questions. So, we wait for somebody to complain, and then we jump on the wagon without understanding. And under human development, you know, on pillar number 2, under human development and community resilience, the government has realized finally that they need human development. They need to capacitate, you know, the very person for whom the dream and government vision is written. This person is behind or needs some sort of skills for him to participate, you know, mainstreamly. This person will need to be developed to a certain extent. So the government is realizing this, and finally, you know, coming to terms with the fact that we are having human underdevelopment. I was talking to Dwight today, and I said that our country is not a knowledge driven country. We find it very difficult to read and in fact get information, access to information. We can preach about access to information, but it must be intentional. How intentional is it? Should it be? How, what does, because the government can come up with policies and, you know, the government can come up with ways to, good ways and good policies. But if we are not at the level where we are able to understand what government is doing or is talking about, we will have a problem, because then we are going to drag the government down. So we'll be dragged down. We'll drag each other down. We'll be moving one step, you know, ahead and three steps backward. And then eventually we will slip and fall, because we are not in touch with what government is doing, because we don't know. And we don't know because we don't read. We don't read because we don't want. In fact, it's not a culture. It's not a culture of reading. And even if we go online, what we choose to do online tells us that we, you know, tells us that we are not knowledge driven. So this whole week we have been trying to make sense of government plans. We were trying to make sense of government plan. We had plans. We have Federico, you know, links, and then we had Micah Vekotora. You know, they almost agree on many, you know, factors. They almost agree on many factors. So this is to show us that somehow we are lagging behind. And even our basic education, it seems that it's not basic enough. You know, it doesn't have the capacity to produce skilled people. And of course, even Herbert Yao, the labor analyst, also said it, that our basic education is not maybe it is too basic to produce necessary skills. So our education might be basic, too basic, and we are not producing what we want or what the market wants. And then at the end of the day, we have overproduced, like graduates. There are many of them. We have overproduced, you know, graduates, and therefore the demand for jobs is very high, but the supply of jobs opportunities is very low. A big demand, small supply. Because we have overproduced, we understood that, you know, the more academically sound we have, the people we have, the more we'll be ranked to be, you know, the most educated, you know, country. That was our forefathers' dream. Like, the founding father, when we got independent, he wanted education. Education, that's what he stressed more on. But then we didn't, you know, have time to sit down and find out that how do we reconcile between education and cultural arts and indigenous, you know, intellectual knowledge. How do we reconcile the two? Which one should be the foundation? And now we made the academic to be the foundation and to be the focus at the same time. And then, of course, we exonerated our indigenous knowledge and cultural heritage and, you know, cultural art. And in fact, we dealt away with manual work. There was something that used to be called manual work. In the 90s, in the early 90s, there was manual work. But the so-called human rights activism and so-called, you know, they came in and said, no, that was corporal punishment. And now children know nothing. Our vocational, you know, centers are struggling to kick off, you know, to really produce innovative people that should be part of the, because we want to be part of, we want technological advancement under pillar number one. We want to digitize Namibia and make sure that Namibia is a global player, is a global digital player. But how does Namibia become a digital player globally when we have Delta, we have done away with manual work? Manual work was not punishment. It was a way of teaching, you know, school children, you know, handcraft, where they were taught how to build, like in our, in those days, in our village school, you know. They'll be taught how to build and how to carve, you know, wood and make, pounding, mortars and so forth, and how to make canoes and all that. They were taught those things on school. But now we don't even know woodwork. So needlework, painting, all those were, you know, craft work, you know, handiwork. I mean, handicraft. All these things, if we could have continued with that, we would have gone somewhere as far as production is concerned. We can't be industrialized when we don't know how to do work with our hands. You know, just you find somebody from Zimbabwe making a chair out of bamboo reeds, but this person still has a master's degree in something. So, and when they are talking about development, it is easy for everyone to move because everyone almost is at the same pace. But then with us, it's very easy for us to drag each other down because we are not at the same pace. So, but the government is realizing it. And the government is realizing that we need to incorporate indigenous knowledge under human development. So after a short break, we'll be with a horticulturalist. And don't forget, there'll be a draw today where I'll be able to call somebody on air that won themselves a $500, you know, dollar voucher at ShopRite YouSave. So just stay tuned. You know, good things are coming. Just don't turn the dial. We will be right back. So it's almost a minute.
Bargain Hunters or YouSaves has slash price on groceries, treats, fresh fruits and veggies. 2 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just $89.99. 10 kilos number one maize meal, $99.99. And pay just $12.99 for each of the following. 18 roads baked beans in tomato sauce, 100 grams champion French bologna, 20 U brand rooibos tea bags. Save big at YouSave.
All right, we are back. We are almost in half an hour. We only have an hour left on our conversation, and we will be will be out of here by 2:30. And of course, Nkundana Dhingi will take us through more conversation. So just stay tuned as we want to know what the horticultural, you know, the community in Namibia think about NDP6. Because NDP6 is for everyone. Is for everyone. NDP6 is for everyone. Therefore, everyone need to be participating in understanding it. Because every sector is covered, from entertainment to intellectual to cultural heritage. Everyone is called upon, that the government wants to include everyone. So just stay tuned, and you need to also know that you are expected to be a participant in both NDP6 and the development entirely. So don't think you are left behind. No one should be left out. Everyone must join the government in its dream. But for us to do that, we need to understand. We need to understand our role. Each and every one of us has a role to play. And ask yourself, what is your role? And you need to read, because but the government is saying by 2030, if you are a micro and medium and small, small and medium enterprise, or, you know, entrepreneur, you need to listen to what the government is saying. Because by 2030. All right, so we are with Jesaya Shipingana, who is a horticulturalist. And we just want to understand them, whether they are also at the same pace as far as NDP6 is concerned. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing,
sir? Yes, good.
I'm listening out there.
Yes, so I'm sure you are following what the government intentions are under NDP6, and tell us, what do you hope for in NDP6?
Come again?
Yeah, I'm sure you are following what the government is saying about agriculture in NDP6. And yes, since you are a horticulturalist, yes, tell us what your hopes are.
There's one part that I'm not hearing. I can hear to tell you what the government is saying about horticulture, since I'm a horticulturalist. But what is the inside action?
I'm saying, tell us what your hopes are. What your hopes are when you hear the government talking about agriculture, especially, you know, achieving food security by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what are your views?
The message is quite clear. But the message being clear, that alone does not or will not speak to the need. It will require a collective effort, whether from the public perspective, whether from the government perspective. Here I'm referring to say whether the plan has been scrutinized, put in place. At the moment it's on paper, so we'll wait then when it's implemented practically, because a lot has been said, but less has been done. So in other words, once we see the implementation, and I am more of the implementation than of talking, although I can refer to say, seeing is belief. So that's one of the concerns. But otherwise, in general, the plan is good, but it requires a collective. It requires an effort from different groups, being the public perspective, being the government. At the end of the day, government become people, and the people become government. Because the government cannot be there without people, and the people cannot be there without governance. For that matter. And without implementation, we also want to understand whether what has been said speaks to the need, or what has been said does not speak to the need. In other words, are we going to what is known or what is going to be implemented, even though it's not going to speak to the need? Now, what do I mean in terms of the need? Is it going to talk of much of social economic, for example? Is it going to have activities that are going to talk about social economic, for example? Is it going to talk about job creation? Or is it going to talk about providing? Because I prefer us as a nation to have something that is going to speak to the need of creation than of providing. Because in one way or another, that to create dependence, and dependence become a disease on its own, and then you'll be having people who will be crying baby left, right, center, over and over, and you are cycling. Are we going to say, or are we going to implement, or are we going to revive what is not working? Because I can also give an example to say, for past years, we had even green scheme that were not productive, but the green scheme were meant to speak loud enough in terms of food security, job creation, skill transformations, among others. So if this is not going to do this time, but it's going to be implemented, that of course yes. But if it is the same case that we are not going to implement, but we are going to say things on paper, then of course yes, it's a time wasting, sorry for the word, and Atuka Okolanambera is going to cycle.
Yeah, but somebody would ask you, what do you think your participation could be in making sure that the government achieve its dream?
My participation is simply to say it's more going to be based on skill transformation, which is now going to include training development, training needs, so that we are not going to run risk of putting the resources at wastage, because having a plan, you implement before capacity building. The first step, people must be capacitated. People should be capacitated through training needs, through skill transformation, so that they have what we call a know-how. And through a know-how, you are sure then we are going to have what we call tangible results. At the end of the day, you will be having results, can be anything, but we want results that are going to speak to the need. Like I said, do you want result as a result in general, because the result can be anything? Or do you want a result that's going to speak to the need again? So that can only, if you want a result that's going to speak to the need, including what I mentioned, the area, what I alluded to, the area, skill transformation, job creation, capacity building, among others, then time is now for us to implement. Now, another question among the, to add to your question, is to say, which one is which? Is it to have somebody, an expert elsewhere, to leave the expertise here, or is to send those with indigenous knowledge, including also those who are academic? Because, like I said, there's a collaboration. Another question, Mr. Flores, we've got a lot of questions. Are we going to deal with academics, or are we going to deal with a collaboration of academic and indigenous knowledge? In the other words, those who are already at the forefront, being academic, being not academic, at the end of the day, we'll go back to one of the Eagle FM adverts, which say, let's sit around the table, agree to disagree, which one is working. And if something is not working, why should we go for it? That's it.
Okay, so in your view, right, you think there must be including indigenous knowledge should be included in the capacity training?
Come again, Mr. Frank.
Do you say that indigenous knowledge should be included in capacity training?
Yes.
But we don't have indigenous knowledge being advanced anyway in our universities. Where is that indigenous knowledge is going to come from?
It's going to come from a public perspective, because, like I said, we have, including myself, I'm sorry to say that, if we got resourceful people, hanging fruits, people that are there, taking the lead, like I'm giving the insight that does not speak enough. But you go there, you see tangible results. We have changed the life of many. We have got tangible results. And that is resources for people. That is hanging fruit. Now, these people must be incorporated, because I'm coming back strongly to say, if you have got an academic somebody who is not productive, just for pride purpose, and there are no tangible results, result can be anything, Mr. Shinengera. Result can be anything they listen out there. But we want result that is going to speak loud enough to Namibia and Chad, including future generation. We need mechanism. We need strategies. We need tactics that are going to speak to the needs, including the future generation to come. Restoration, but not only to say, I'm going to Zambezi because the soil is fertile, so that I only extract what is already there, but I'm not going to restore. And yet, we are talking of the grassroots, and yet, we are talking of sustainable agriculture, which is just in the mouth, but on the ground, not. An academic who cannot even think out of the box, only if they see Mr. Sambasa, sorry to use him, coming, then they start running. Those that I can remember. So, we don't want a system like that. We want a system that the people are going to be self-starter. I'm sorry to go in the manicure. Onto Dapa Akwata. I don't know, Mr. Shinengera, maybe you can translate it. Apa Akwata. Wherever you are, let's pull the string toward the one direction. But where you are holding, make sure that you are holding with both hands. But if you are holding just on paper, that's what we don't want. So it must be, I'm sorry to use the word, it must be a collaboration, because let's also not forget about inclusivity in terms of participating in economic, because nobody should be left out. And the late Mr. Gottlieb Genkop has said inclusivity. And it's not only him as his legacy. It's also a foundation for me and you, who is going to disagree and agree with me. That's it.
All right, Mr. Shpingana, thank you very much for your point, and we wish you a great day ahead in your horticulture work.
As always, welcome and thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right, that is the gentleman from the horticulture. They want to say collaboration between indigenous and, you know, academic knowledge. And the government is promising that it will protect indigenous intellectual property, which we are going to dissect this in depth just in a moment, you know. But let's just get what something on the way. Somebody is going to walk out with a $500 voucher today. And I'm going to call the number right on air. I'm going to call the number so that you hear when I'm calling it. Because I don't want you to go into to go and say, no, it was a made up. I don't want to made up anything. I just want to call the number so that we are going to hear the lady herself. Somebody won a $500 voucher. A $500 voucher. And that is for ShopRite YouSave. And in a moment, in few. All right. So this is exactly 1:45 where we are supposed to call the number. Let me try this number and see whether it is on air. And if the person will answer, and we will hear what is going to happen. Let's hear. Okay, it's preparing itself. It's preparing itself.
Hello.
Hello, is this Maria Akafima?
Yes, Valeria Kafuma.
Valeria Kafuma, yes. How are you today?
I'm very fine. How are you?
Very fine. Where are you from? Where are you in? Are you in Windhoek or you are in?
Oshakati.
You are in Oshakati.
Yes.
All right, Valeria Kafima, you participated in the competition.
Mm-hmm. Which one is that?
I'm calling you from Eagle FM.
Oh yes.
So when I'm calling you from Eagle FM, that means I don't even need to explain myself. You already know the story. But here the thing. You have walked out with a $500 voucher. That is ShopRite You Save.
Wow.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So any excitement, new comment there before I let you go?
No, I'm so happy. I just want to say thank you for the voucher. I'm so excited.
Right.
Can't wait to have it and enjoy it.
All right. So you'll be called accordingly, and so that the arrangements will be made on how you should receive your voucher and enjoy it the moment. As soon as you receive it, please enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So they are going to call you. Our team is going to call you whether it's Monday, so that you can arrange on how you can get your voucher.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Thank you very much and have a great day.
Thank you. Have a great day too.
Right. Right, so that is Valeria Kafima that won the voucher, walked away with a $500 voucher. But you need to include me in this competition. I also want to walk away with at least one voucher, so that I see what I can get for myself. Yeah, but for those who are participating and are following, please keep following our conversation, and because you also tend to win one or two stuff. It is 12 minutes to the hour of 2 o'clock, and then this 42 minutes that is left, I want us to talk. So I want us to have a conversation, and if you want to come in, the number in studio is 083-288-401. Most people just choose to listen. They don't even call, but it's fine. That is fine. Because it's good to get information. You know, to get as much information as you can, it's good to listen in. But where you feel you want to be part of the conversation, you are still welcome to do so by calling in. And the number in studio, as usual, is 083-288-401. All right, so we go back to our conversation. And under pillar number 2, the government intends to, they want human development. And they want human development to increase capacity in terms of human resource. Well, the government has to really work very hard. The government has to really work hard here, because they have set a trap against themselves at the very beginning when we started. Because if this is the time we are realizing the importance of indigenous knowledge or incorporating indigenous knowledge and cultural heritage in development, if this is the time we are realizing this, then it is unfortunate, because we are going to work very hard to make sure we achieve such a dream. That's very much complex, because we didn't have a time to reconcile between the two. We didn't have time to create a synergy between the two, between indigenous knowledge and, you know, academic knowledge, between the indigenous-based intellectual capacity or intellectual, you know, properties with that which is driven by academics. In fact, to a certain extent, we have said that, you know, our indigenous knowledge lacks scientific insight. We said that our own indigenous knowledge lacks, you know, scientific insight. So we can't really, it cannot be relied upon. And this is what, you know, came from certain officials within the government circle for 35 years. This has been an echoing for 35 years, you know, kind of discouraging, you know, indigenous knowledge as far as, you know, certain treatment of certain diseases are concerned, even, you know, certain knowledge on application of certain knowledge. We limited it as, we just viewed it as, you know, as ancient methods, which, according to the National Planning Commission, you know, the delegation that went to China, this year, for, you know, when they went to familiarize themselves with how China is developing as far as healthcare is concerned, the report that came from there was very shocking. You know, it was shocking in terms of the fact that what we shun here in Africa or in Namibia, the Chinese embrace it very well. They have embraced their ancient methodologies and, you know, incorporated it with, you know, modern, you know, way of development. So, which means they have a concept of, you know, mixing the two, you know, making sure that there's a collaboration between indigenous knowledge and academic or modern academic, you know, knowledge. And that's why you still have Chinese medicine that is called Chinese medicine. They produce medicine using their indigenous, using a combination of both scientific, modern scientific, and ancient, you know, indigenous knowledge. When I was there personally, and I had it for myself, when the Namibian delegation was giving reports, I was there. When the ambassador was, and you see, and something that they came to say, that the level of national patriotism is very high. You know, the level of national patriotism is very high. And this is coming from, you know, when indigenous knowledge is incorporated with modern ways of life, then the government is saying, you know, the government is saying that they are going to make sure that Namibians have a self-identity. I'm just paraphrasing because I don't have the book here. Under pillar number two, they want to make sure that there is identity, national pride, as far as, you know, cultural heritage and indigenous knowledge is concerned. They want to make sure that tourism is, you know, our national cultural heritage boosts tourism and contributes to GDP. That's what the government wants to make sure that happens. But I think we have wasted a lot of time. All right, let's take.
We have wasted a lot of time.
Yes, how are you?
Let's
yeah, can you just turn the volume down a bit?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Can you just turn the volume down a bit?
Yes, I'm doing. Okay. Hello?
Yes.
Am I clear?
You are clear.
Okay, no thanks. Oh, yeah, on indigenous language and indigenous culture, whatever you call medication and other stuff. You know, the problem is we followed too much. And the biggest problem we've made, we never came up with our own language. We should have said, this is our medium of communication, which was supposed to be African, one of the African languages. Now, the problem we have is we like fighting for languages. We would have chosen one language and said, okay, fine, we have got one language which we will use as a medium of communication. Now, for a person who knows some herbs in their language, for you to translate it in English sometimes is not easy. You see? Secondly, the Europeans, the medication they give us, they find some of most of them they found it from within us, and then they just went and they did the improvement on it. You see? And then when they brought it back to us, they saw that as high price. And then, yet we forgot our own, because our own was associated with the, I want to use the word, you know, like evil. Ours is witchcraft. You see, even if you want to cure a person, they'll tell you, you and me are from Zambezi region, we have got a concept we call Pyrezo. Eh? Then if you go there, they'll tell you, no, those things are not. But today, if you go to the same doctor, the white or whatever, the European whatever, this cultural doctor, whatever, this normal doctors or for not cultural, the normal doctors, this one who goes and do medicine, whichever university. When you go to them, that title we used to put there, it's called consultation fee today. You see? So they have taken away what belonged to us. And the first thing they did was to take away our culture. Is it? And to change our names. They gave us the names without meaning. And then they told us, if you are called Masiko, whatever, you know, you are called Masiko because it's Masiko, it's night. Then you say, oh, how can you be called night? You should be James or you should be Andrew. You get what I mean? So they demonized our own and we got lost over time. And
all right. So, you know, this is where I get a problem with Africans. You know, we keep going back to the past of who did what to us. And
yes.
How what was done to us. I want to give you an example of our neighbor, the people that are living with us in Namibia.
Yes.
They are called the Afrikaners.
Yes.
The Afrikaners were also colonized, like we were. They were put in a concentration camp by the Anglos.
Yes, the British.
Yes. So, what made Afrikaners among the richest communities world, in the world today, is when they rose from there, they totally forgot about their past and focused on what they wanted to achieve. But our problem in Africa, we keep talking about the past and we are doing nothing to improve ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know where that's our problem.
Yes, no, definitely. The biggest problem comes in. When we want to do anything we want to do, we want to go and consult and get an approval.
So
let's make it a simple thing.
Whose problem is that? When you want to do something and you want to go and seek approval, which means you are suffering from self-identity crisis.
Yes. And this is where we are suffering from. The leadership, most of the time, it's, look, I always call it mostly in the lower level. If you go to the lowest people, some of the people in the rural areas don't even go to get medication or whatever. They know how to do it. in the rural areas. The problem we have is us who come to the city when we go back because we want to have that status. You get what I mean? To the point that when you are given the herbs, you say, no, these things are not, you know, it's an old fashion. You know, let's look at the example. I want to give an example of Katura Hospital. Eh? What sells us to fix that Katura Hospital? Is it because there's no money or what? The moment even you, if I say, let's get all the medical aid we normally pay, let's pay to Katutura. The government so that they fix that Katutura Hospital in the central hospital. It's us, most some of our people start saying, no, government is going to steal. But yet where we are, that money has been stolen also. It's not reported. But stealing happens everywhere. But we're not going to fix Katutura, but when we get sick, and now you cannot go afford that other services, they will chase you to Katutura, then you want to blame the government. But you are the one who made that Katutura not to be fixed. It's us who forget about our heritage. Listen. But we want to, as we are blaming it on others, but why? We invite our others to come and tell us how we should behave in our own culture. Look at this. The current minister for heaven. Where have you ever seen a chieftainship which you have to be replaced by the cultural thing ends up in the court of law, and a lawyer who is going to represent that another group is a 20-year-old child who doesn't understand anything about the culture. Is it? We have taken our own, instead of solving our own problem, that's why I like the minister for Eben. Instead of solving our own problem within our culture, we have commercialized it. We take it to the white, to the white Supreme Court, whatever. Say, no, this is the court that can tell us. And then they will tell you, only a competent court will do this and that and that. But the truth does not live in the court. The truth lives with the people.
All right, my brother, thank you very much. Let's give chance to the others.
All right, yeah.
Yes. Guys, Africans, listen to me. We need to grow up from this blame shift because it does not take us anywhere. We keep telling ourselves how Europeans did what, but we don't talk about how much contribution we have made for them to make it easier for them to achieve whatever it is that they have done on us. We don't talk about that. So, because we refuse, most of us in Africa, we refuse to be accountable. You know, when you refuse to take responsibility of your life, you will keep blaming somebody for your own problem. So 8 years ago, in fact, let's go back, 8 years ago, China was under colonialism, was under a colonial power. But today, China is the second largest economy in the world, second, the most leading in industry. How did other people rise from that, from that ashes into glory? Same thing happening to somebody. Now, let me put two women, two girls. One girl is very ambitious. Along the way, she becomes pregnant. You know? And when she becomes pregnant, she decides, okay, I will carry the pregnancy, give birth, and continue with, you know, my academic dream. Gives birth, continues, graduates, becomes a teacher. Then you give another, the same girl, the same, almost of the same age, gets pregnant, and then gives birth. No ambition, no plan. Ends up getting pregnant again. And pregnant again, and this girl will be bitter at some point and start blaming her impregnators. But she forgets that she had a major role to play or to contribute to this. And the worst thing is that she forgets that she has no ambition. That's why she was able to be pregnant for the second time, for the third time, and for the fourth time, and for the fifth time. But what about a girl of the same age who is today a teacher, but she was once impregnated at grade 12? So it's ambition that we don't have. That's why we keep blaming Europe for our current situation. We still want to continue to say, a white man came, took us, did us, what us. Well, America can say the same. America can say, Britain did this to me, and France. But America rose and shook France, shook Britain out. And in fact, the whole North America has no British or French influence to date. They made sure that their hemisphere is free from external influence. What made America a superpower today? Because they forgot their past and they focused on what they should do or should have done to make sure that their future was bright. So our problem in Africa is no longer European. Our problem is now programmed by ourselves. So how many black people are in Namibian parliament today? 99.9.9%. Now just look at the parliamentary, you know, conversation. How one has to be dragged out of the, you know, of parliament, and you know, somebody's jacket must be torn by the police. That's the type of parliament we have. So, and then we fail to carry out development, to implement developmental project, because we have no time to discuss important issues. We have time to discuss issues that gives birth to Karata Goma, that prompts the, you know, security to come in and tear our jackets. So, I think it's time for us to start looking within ourselves and see what it is that we are contributing to. You know, we have contributed majorly to what we have gone through, but that's the past now. Let's forget about what Europe has done. Let's look at what we can do as Namibians to make sure that we are talking about incorporating, we are talking about incorporating indigenous knowledge with academic knowledge. The government wants to start somewhere. At least they have realized that, okay, fine, we have wasted a lot of time. Now, this is what we want to do, at least by 2030. So, but as a Namibian, how do you come in to contribute your part to what the government wants to achieve? As an African, how do you come in to make sure that Africa is industrialized? Well, the problem we have is we are refusing to grow up in Africa. That's number one. Number two, you can never take responsibility if you are not grown up. The people that take responsibility of their own lives are grown-ups. A child can never be accountable, can never take, you know, responsibility. And this is what makes Africa to be where it is. We refuse to grow up. And we refuse to take responsibility. Leaders in Africa refuse to grow up. And they refuse to take responsibility. That's why we will keep going back to who did what to us and how what was done. Those are child talk. If you people don't know, it's child talk. Now go into the kindergarten and find children making noise and come back and say, hey, you are making noise. They will say, it is who, this one who started. Because children cannot take responsibility. And this is what makes Africa a child continent. With all natural resources. In fact, with 100% endowment of roots and whatever that have capacity to produce the world-class medicine. We participate 0% in medical research, but we have 55 to 70% of communicable diseases. So what does that tell us? It tells us that we want to continue being a child continent of people, both citizens and the leaders that are refusing to take responsibility. So we are refusing to take responsibility. And then at the end of the day, we want to blame the one. I'm giving an example of Afrikaners now. There were a few million of them in the 18th century. If I'm not mistaken, there were not even a million yet. Or maybe they were. But then they were put under, you know, Anglo control. And concentration camp. And they tried to fight it off. There were too few to fight. But then they grouped with a few local tribes that helped them to fight the British off. So, but then when they rose from there, they didn't get stuck in the past by saying, well, we were colonized, we were this, we were... They made sure to say, look, what the Anglos did to us was a lesson. Let us create our own economy and our own identity. Let's create our own economy. Let's come up with our own organizations. And around the 19th century, they protested because there was, they protested that they were, their companies and, you know, businesses were not, you know, the competition was not fair for them. So foreign companies were taking over their businesses almost. And that's when the concept, though it was misused, you know, when we talk about apartheid, we only talk about it from a colonial point of view. It, of course, there were bad leaders maybe among the white South African, you know, government, that, you know, took it to an extent. But the intention was to protect African businesses and economy. So, it was to say, it was to say a white South African who is an Afrikaner first, then somebody else. So, and it was just misused, just like anything else can be misused by, you know, people with bad intentions. But they rose, they created their own economy, and the good thing about them is that they, you know, all their businesses are in here. Yeah, they are in Africa. In fact, they have most businesses in South Africa. And the Afrikaner group that is in Namibia, most of them, their businesses are here. In fact, they buy properties in here. And, you know, they, in fact, invest in the local economy. That's a good thing about it. So they invest in the local economy. But if they could have been stuck in the past, like we are, they wouldn't have been, you know, an independent group. That's why most of them, when Trump said, look, there's a genocide of white people in South Africa, and we offer African people to come to, you know, to the United States of America and start life. You know, a lot of Afrikaners says no. There's no life in America. Life is in Africa. We are Afrikaners. And for us to preserve our culture and identity, it's when we are here in Africa, because we are born here. Well, our ancestors were Dutch, they were French, they were Malay, and so forth, but we are not them. We are not them. We are our own identity. And just a few young people, young stars, you know, among the Afrikaners who took planes and went to America. So what is preventing us from developing and from catching, you know, from really creating a proper identity of ourselves, which the government is dreaming of anyway, is not an external issue. The issue has become very much internal. We need to ask doctors and how easy or difficult to discover internal bleeding. I think that could be the most severe bleeding that can kill somebody. Because at least if you see an external bleeding, you know that the person is bleeding from here. But internal bleeding, we'll need to ask a doctor how easy or how difficult it is to discover that. So, our problem in Africa is internal. And the government has now realized that, okay, fine, we have wasted a lot of time. We have neglected indigenous knowledge. We have neglected, you know, cultural, you know, heritage, which is supposed to boost tourism to a certain extent. And the government is saying now, what we are going to do is we are going to, you know, put it under human development so that the open lifelong learning continues from the community level. And then they say human development and community resilience. Now, community resilience needs to be well understood, because if it is not understood, the government will take 2 steps ahead and 10 steps backward. And at the end of the day, the government might fall, you know, might slip and fall. Because the government has created a slippery, you know, road for itself since 1991. When SWAPO, you know, heard about national, you know, reconciliation, and, you know, and they grabbed it and said, okay, this could be a good concept. Let us implement it. Okay, maybe where it is coming from, also, it was not well understood. We don't know, but let's focus on ours. So what SWAPO focused on was to make sure that, okay, forgiveness, we forgive each other between SWAPO and Southwest Africa Territorial Forces. We incorporate them into the mainstream, you know, military and police force. So we forget about what happened. We are not going to arrest you or, you know, hunt you down because you are a member of, you know, Kofut and Southwest Africa Territorial Force. That's where they ended. We didn't come back to say, okay, we were fighting, we were abroad, but we had traditional authorities that were leading the Bantustan, as, you know, the Bantustan that were, you know, different economies of Namibia under that Bantustan. But we didn't find out how are you doing it. Is there anything we can take from you who are traditional leaders that we can incorporate into our modern governance? SWAPO didn't do that. So, is there any indigenous methodology that we can modernize, that we can at least modernize? You know, our founding father had a plan to say, let's educate every Namibian. Let's make sure schools are built. That was a good plan. But maybe he was not advised that we needed incorporation of indigenous knowledge into our academics. We also needed, you know, indigenous knowledge into our paramedic, knowledge for us to build a very strong medical response, system. We need to invoke both, academic and indigenous ancient knowledge and methodologies and, modernize. How do we become democratic with Namibian characteristics? We didn't have any characteristic of our own. We have borrowed the concept. In fact, at some point, we didn't know even where to start. When we were establishing a government, we had to ask Zimbabwe to help us. So we reached out to Zimbabwe to help us, and that's where, the current president of Zimbabwe was sent. Mr. Emmerson Mnangagwa was the one that was sent to come and, help Namibia establish a government, because we didn't know where to start. So our problem is major. Our problem is more major than what Europe did to us in the past, because we are talking about our current problem. Our problem is major, and it needs multi-sectoral approach. You and I need to participate. Because just like we know how to say that very well, because it was, it was nailed into our heads to believe it, to the letter, that our problem is because of what Europe has done. They came and took our culture, came and took our word. Fine. But let's nail this fact into our heads again, that we had a major role to play in that. Whatever Europe has done to us, we played a role in it. And politicians will never tell you that. In fact, even our forefathers, will never tell us that. But we played a very powerful contributing. We were, in fact, at the center point of making it easier for Europe to come and take and do what they did. Now, look. For 300 or 400 years, we knew there were strange people roaming around our areas. We knew that. We knew Vasco da Gama, Bartolomeo Diaz, Diego Cao, and others. We knew they were strange people. But you know what? We helped them achieve what they wanted to achieve. Why? Because we were focused on something else. We were not focused on discovery, because by the time the white people came here, we have already deviated from our culture ourselves. Because our culture was innovative. There was innovation in culture. There was art. There was physics. Everything was there. But by the time the European came here, we have already deviated from it. We were focusing on other things. And by the time we woke up, we were in the midst of colonialism. And when we realized that we couldn't negotiate with these guys, because they have already built systems that were too difficult for us to dismantle with our very limited intellectual capacity, we decided, fine, we are going to fight it all. We're going to fight it out. And then we fought. We went to fight. And by the time we came to fight, we were told, come, let's sit down and talk. What was in our mind was freedom. But we didn't understand the cost through which that freedom will come. In fact, establishing it. So we sat on the table because we were not knowledge driven. They managed to just give us a little power, which is political power. You know, power to fight in parliament and the power to have your jacket torn because of the karatagoma that you cause in parliament. That's the only power that we got from that freedom. Nothing else. The economy is still in their hands because by the time we woke up, they already built precepts and you know, statutes and the laws that we are still using today. So that's why I'm asking you a question. How many black people do you have in parliament now? Almost the majority. But what laws are they discussing? So we have a major part to play in all this ourselves. We have a major part to play in this ourselves. Fine, because if you think I'm just bluffing or talking, just go through all the list of your laws. There are still 1960, 1920, 19-what laws. And the laws that we managed to build, you know, to change and create are not laws that are economically enough to make us, you know, participant in the mainstream economies. In fact, what we are fighting for in parliament these days is not of economic benefit to anyone. You know, we are fighting for other things. So we are having a major role to play, both in what we are going through and in what we want to see, in the change that we want to see. We are the ones that are in charge, that are supposed to participate and make sure that Namibia becomes a knowledge-driven society. When you stop listening to junk content and start reading, you know, going through policies, and then you can hold your politicians accountable, the politicians that you have brought to power. You tell them, look, we didn't call you to go and get your jacket torn in parliament. We called you to go and represent us at ABCD. Look at this law. Look at this policy. Look at this act. So, but because we are not knowledge driven, we keep quiet and politicians lose focus and they start tearing their jackets in parliament. That's all they can do. They lose focus because we who have put them in power have lost focus. We don't know where to start holding them accountable. I mean, if you don't read the NDP-6, in fact, you don't even know what is in NDP-5. You don't know NDP. You don't know all the NDPs. You have never read Harambe Prosperity Plan 1 and 2. You don't know that. You have never read the manifesto of your own party that you put into power, whether they are opposition or not. How do you come and hold the government of the day and your politicians accountable? From what? You have nothing to use as a basis on which you should hold them accountable because you don't understand anything. You have not read anything. That's where we find ourselves. So that's why it's very important for you to get your hands on the deck and make sure that whatever document that is released in parliament or in the government, you have it. You see, I took it upon myself to make sure that no, I need NDP-6 printed. I'm not going to wait for the government to print it. I'm going to pay my own money and print it myself. So we need to be intentional. But our time is up, and this has been the on the radar with of course France Senegal characteristics. The normal on the radar is coming on Monday. But let's stay tuned for other programs that are coming on. I'm now handing over to Lois in the north there. That is going to continue with Onkundana Zingi. So, please, let's stop the blame shift. Let's start, you know, looking at the now. Forget about the yesterday. If you were beaten yesterday, forget about it. But do the right thing to change your current situation. If you are a lady that got pregnant and all you can do is to blame the person that impregnated you when you also contributed, that's very sad. But somebody who is ambitious will say, well, I will give birth and I'll continue with my dream until I achieve it. I'll continue until I achieve my goal. That's an ambitious girl. And that girl today we call is China. Yes.